Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, brought to you by First Horizon, Big Bank Muscle, Small Bank Hustle. Visit firsthorizon.com/get it all. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Kieser, Ian Safar here with you on this Thursday morning. We welcome Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports to the program on our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Charles, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well, gents. How are you doing this morning?
We are doing awesome. Nice. Appreciate you taking time to be with us. So, Charles, as we sit here today with the NFL draft now a couple of weeks away, how do you feel like the top three, top five is kind of shaping into focus here as we're a couple of weeks out?
Yeah, I mean, I think we kind of talked about this before, but it feels like it's pretty locked in, I think, in the top three now. You know, I think obviously Ward comes off at one to the Titans. I think to me, the Browns, I think it's going to have to be Travis Hunter. You know, they've devoted a lot of time at looking at Abdul Carter as well. All the heavy hitters were at a private workout with Carter. But, you know, I think the Browns are staring at the reality that it's you have two positions where he could potentially be an elite player. And for a Browns team that, you know, absolutely could use another corner, definitely needs wide out help, probably look at Hunter as being just a player that, to them, they're like, look, if we're going to screw this up, it's harder to screw it up with this guy because he can play two positions. And which, you know, when you talk about ceilings and floors, he's this weird prospect who has like a super high ceiling, but because of the fact that he plays these two positions, he plays them really well, including, you know, the wideout position where he's raw, but he still played it really well. His floor is really high too, so that has to be, I think, really, really attractive to the Browns. Plus, I think he'll sell. I think he's a draw. I think fans will want to come out and see him, which definitely is attractive to ownership. And then the third pick's interesting because if it ends up being Abdul Carter, you know, you're the Giants and you have Kayvon Thibodeau, who I think they'll pick up his fifth-year option by May 1st, which is like $16 million in 2026. You have Brian Burns, right? So you're sitting there and you say, man, you have two edges as it is, and they're highly paid, and theoretically, you want to extend Kayvon Thibodeau, although I think that's still up in the air, and maybe that creates some of the wiggle room for drafting Abdul Carter. But Abdul Carter is just it's intriguing when you just consider the assets that are already on that defensive line with those two ends, Dexter Lawrence. It's a lot to pump into the front end of that defense, and it makes me wonder if. We all think the draft starts at four when you get past these three picks, but it makes me wonder if teams might call the Giants and say, hey, this Abdul Carter's clearly the number one guy on our board. What if we can get ourselves up to three, and would the Giants potentially entertain, you know, trading out of that spot because of the fact that they're pretty stocked up at the end position? I don't know if that's the case. You know, my guess is, knowing some people in that organization, you take him because he's probably the number one prospect on your board. You just figure it out. You're like, okay, maybe use him the way Dallas used Micah Parsons, and we can kind of make him sort of a joker and move him around on defense. And then ultimately, if we move on from Kayvon Thibodeau, or potentially, you know, we could trade him, opens up other options. Now we have our built-in replacement in Abdul Carter. So three is going to be interesting as we get closer, particularly after we get past that second pick, if it ends up being Travis Hunter. And then, you know, four, I mean, the Patriots got to be, I mean, like, you're sitting there and you're going, we could have the first pick in the draft. We beat the Bills with a nothing. Joe Milton comes out there against the Bills. A lot of scrubs. Like, it was like the Bills didn't want to win that game either. And that costs you the ability to take one of the three dynamic players, or at least, you know, two dynamic players on defense and, well, defense offense with Hunter. But now you're sitting there and you're going, okay, well, we have all these other players available to us at four, and we have needs all over the place, but none of them fit. There's just issues, like, with every single one, whether it's analytical, whether it's like sort of the prototype height, weight, you know, arm length, all these different things. And now they have to think about it four. So four is really, to me, it's where it's going to get really intriguing with the Patriots. And then obviously Shedeur Sanders is going to be the conversation at that point. Everybody's going to go, where does this kid end up? I spitballed it, you know, a while back after, you know, after I had talked about the Raiders having interest in Geno and that potentially opened up the Seahawks for Darnold. And then when that happened and Darnold signed with the Seahawks, I was like, okay, this is what I think could happen with the quarterbacks. And I put Shedeur with the Saints at nine. And I think my reasoning for that remains the same. It's not just quarterback need, but it really fits sort of his style. Playing in a dome, it negates him having to have like a really big arm, where I think if there's some places he goes, particularly weather, when you get into like December, January, he's going to need to have a bigger arm, and he doesn't need that with the Saints. He can go and have a prolific career playing in domes and playing in the NFC South, which is really great for you know, quarterbacks that have maybe a cap on their arm strength. So Shedeur is going to be really interesting, but I also think that 3-4 slot, like what are the Giants going to do with Carter, and then what happens with the Patriots afterward, is the intrigue of the draft. And I think that's going to build all the way into it. I doubt we'll have any idea what the Patriots are going to end up doing it for until they're on the clock.
So I was complaining earlier on the show, Charles, as I love to do, about Aaron Rodgers. I know you like to do that too. But as we were talking before this segment, I guess maybe I should just shut up until the draft is over with him. Is it just as simple as he wants to make sure they don't draft somebody?
I think Rodgers and Cousins are both the same. I think it's at least this is in my mind, this is what's going on. It was interesting because I made a mistake. I thought in my assessment of Rodgers, like what was going on, I was like, okay, well, you have a couple of teams in the Vikings and the Steelers. Like, is the compensatory pick situation playing out too? Because in my mind, I don't know why I thought this, but I thought Rodgers had nothing but void years left on his contract, and I forgot that the Jets cut him. And if you cut him, he doesn't factor into compensatory picks at all. And someone brought that to my attention, and I'm like, oh my God, that's right. They did cut him. He didn't just void out of his contract. And, so in once I realized that, I'm, you know, you're like, why? Okay, so what's going on here? Now, like, this now makes no sense. Like, is he teetering on the edge of retirement? I think a couple of things are happening. I think, number one, I do think he's waiting out the Minnesota situation because they have not signed a backup. They have not added the big backup piece to J.J. McCarthy. And until they do that, that quarterback room is not complete. I do think the Vikings are trying to get past the draft for compensatory picks purposes. And I, you know, whether it's Carson Wentz or whoever they end up signing, I do think they're still leaning into signing a veteran backup with experience to put in the room with McCarthy. But I think Rodgers is waiting to see. And then beyond that, I also think he wants to see, and I know for a fact that this is what, you know, Kirk Cousins would not waive his no trade clause prior to at least the first round of the draft, because he wants to see what teams are going to do with the quarterbacks, because now it's becoming a little more apparent that whether it's Tyler Shuck or Jackson Dart or whoever, you know, there are some teams that could potentially take a shot, AKA the Steelers, on a quarterback later in the draft. And, you know, maybe that changes the functionality of a veteran wanting to go in there. Same with the Browns. I assume, you know, with the Browns likely to take Travis Hunter at two, they're going to fiddle around with who's going to be available at the end of round one. What would it take for us to get up there and get that player, or who's going to be on the board when the first round's over. So I do think that factors. I think Rodgers plays next season. I do. I think he plays for the Steelers. I think he's waiting to see what the Steelers do. I also think in the back of his mind, he's waiting to see, are we sure the Vikings, you know, because the offseason program has started. Are we sure the Vikings, and are the Vikings 100% sure that they're absolutely locked into J.J. McCarthy in 2025. So, yeah, I'd say at this point I would be surprised if either Rodgers there's no way Cousins gets traded before the first day of the draft. And almost no way. And I also think that there's a really good chance that Rodgers doesn't sign anywhere until at least the first day of the draft is ultimately over. And he knows exactly what he's staring at with whatever team or the Steelers, what exactly he's staring at in terms of that roster.
What do you think the likelihood is of a Cousins trade once the draft gets going?
I think between Thursday, I feel like it's most likely to happen after the draft, but after Thursday's over and he and his agent, Mike McCartney, have an idea of like where are these quarterbacks with other teams, I think it's a much higher likelihood that it happens after Thursday. I don't know if it happens between Thursday and Friday, because I do think wherever he goes, if he's going to waive his no trade clause and he's going to go somewhere, in his mind, it's not just going to be a one-year stopgap thing. I think he would like to go somewhere and go, okay, well, this is where I'm going to be for the next couple of years. Like, I don't want to just get traded and be like a one-year guy. And I especially don't want to get traded and be a one-year guy and looking over my shoulder at, you know, is there this other quarterback that's going to get taken? So, like, I still think the Browns are a possibility there for him. So let's say the first round closes and the Browns don't take a quarterback. They don't trade up for anybody. And let's say the second round quarterbacks. Like, let's say it's like a Jalen Milroe. He's got invited to the draft. Great. That's awesome. Good for him. Every team I've talked to about him says great tools, probably a really long developmental process. I mean, you know, at least a couple of years of really working with him to bring around the passing side of his game. So it's like, what would Cousins be comfortable with? And then could all the pieces really come together between Thursday and Friday? I know if you're the Falcons, you're sitting there and you're saying, yeah, we would really like to get a pick in this draft. So if we can engineer it, yeah, we'll really hit the ground hard as soon as day one of the draft's over and see if we can engineer a quick trade between Thursday and Friday so that we have a pick in this current draft. Because those mechanics, and I've talked to GMs and they've tried to engineer trades like during the draft, and it's a total mess a lot of the time. I think it probably would happen after the draft, after everything's kind of settled down. And Cousins has that added knowledge of really fully knowing what a quarterback room is going to look like. He will know at that point what have the Browns added. But I'll also say this. You talk to some people inside the franchise, the Falcons franchise, and they're not convinced that Blank wants to trade him. Like they're in their minds, they're like, Arthur really does not want to move this guy. And clearly Kirk's upset about that. And maybe the possibility presents itself, but it's not just an automatic that, hey, as soon as the draft's over now, Kirk knows here's the places I want to go. Let's get it done. And then Blank, you know, green lights it.
So Charles, the Cowboys have done an outstanding job the last couple of years of waiting until like the very last moment possible to sign some of their big players, be that CeeDee Lamb or Dak Prescott, yeah, and it costing them a lot of money. So here we are with Micah Parsons, and you know, he's sniping back and forth with Jerry Jones. Where do you ultimately think this is going to land, and could this be yet another situation where, I mean, what did CeeDee Lamb wait? Was he in late in camp last year? Prescott was right before week one. Like, could this be another one of those situations for the Cowboys with Parsons?
I think it'll go. We'll run this all the way up to camp. I mean, historically, that's what's happened. And I don't think the Cowboys are off to a great start when, like, they got to stop doing this stuff where they try to talk to players, like when they're doing negotiations, because they have earned themselves a reputation, and it's been this way for a while, where when you talk to agents, particularly of big time players, they will tell you, they have a really hard, like, they're constantly battling Cowboys. Stop trying to negotiate directly with players. Like, we're here for a reason. There's a lot of things to work out. There's structure. There's, you know, there's a lot of, you know, things that have to kind of fall into place, and there's going to be some back and forth. And instead, the Cowboys are always trying to get, I've had a multitude of agents tell me over the years that the Cowboys are always trying to talk one-on-one with a player, and they feel like it's the agents feel like it's the Cowboys trying to finesse it, or you know, just, hey, you'll be a Cowboy for life, and you know, here's all, you know, just lean and try to, you know, play on a player's like heartstrings and get them to then turn around and push their agent to ultimately get a deal done. It was part of the reason why when the Ezekiel Elliott negotiations were going on, they took him out of the country. Because you remember, he like went down to, I think it was like Cabo, right? And their reps were like, we don't want him anywhere near Dallas. We don't want him anywhere near, we don't want him in the U.S. We don't want to have, we're going to take him away and no one's going to know where we are. And we're keeping him away from Jerry and Stephen Jones. And, you know, so the Micah thing, this happens where Jerry's, you know, trying to talk to Micah directly about, you know, making him the highest paid non-quarterback or whatever. And obviously David Mulugeta, who's as big as you get with agents now in this industry, you know, they're not having that. So that's not a great way to begin things. I think it comes together because they're clearly they're committed to making him the highest paid non-quarterback. That's the big thing you got to get out of the way. Now it's about structure. It's about cash flow. You know, what do the guarantees look like in terms of like, are they rolling guarantee? Like, it's a lot of different stuff. Those are the mechanics they got to get fixed, but not great when you got a player already kind of like trying to tell ownership, like, hey, I have an agent for a reason. You got to go through the agent. This is all stuff's happening on social media. And yeah, it's messy. And then in the middle of it, they go and trade for Jalen Milrow. I'm sorry, not Jalen Milrow, Joe Milton. Joe loves Joe Milton, man. He's I remember when Joe told me, I love you, Joe, but I'm going to have to we're gonna have to talk about this. Joe got me so hyped up on Joe Milton after the 2023 draft. Joe's like, I'm telling you, you know, Joe Milton's got a chance to be the number one pick in the draft. He's like, you know, his
arm. Are you sure I said that?
Yes, absolutely, 100%. Because we were talking about Anthony Richardson, and you're like, I'm telling you, this guy, Joe Milton, could be Anthony Richardson next year. He's like, he's, you know, his arm and all this stuff. And Joe got me so hyped up, and I turned around, and what did I do? I went out, and I start talking to personnel people. They're like, you're not an evaluator, dude. They're like, you need to relax. They're like, the guy, you know, he couldn't, there's a reason why he couldn't pin down a starting job at Michigan. You know, there's a reason why, despite the fact that he's got an unbelievable blend of, you know, tools he's just completely put together. But there was no way he was ever going to beat out Hendon Hooker before Hendon Hooker left. And, you know, it was funny when I kind of ran into this brick wall. Now, I didn't know he was going to go and, like,
throw that ball through a brick wall.
He can. He's got that. But it was funny because it was a few weeks ago. Maybe a month ago when, again, coming out of the Senior Bowl, I start to hear from inside the Patriots, like, yeah, you know, we're going to make Milton available. And, like, you know, so – and then I start seeing in the media – people are like, well, they're gonna see if they can get a third round pick for him. And I'm like, okay, let me see what his value is. So I ran around the league and I'm like talking to, I'm just like, hey, just give me an idea. And everybody's like, are you like,
they
no, he's not worth a third. Yeah, they're like, he's not worth a third round pick. They're like, he played against the Bills. It was nothing but a bunch of backups, you know, for the most part for the Bills. And he was out of structure, like, the entire game. Like, he wasn't – like, they're just, like, the same issues that were there coming into the draft. That has not changed because he ran around against the Bills and showed off his arm. That's great, but you can't – that's not how you play. He's, you know, it was part of what killed, you know, Johnny Manziel, aside from everything else that was there. Manziel was just running around out of structure doing crazy stuff. And that was never going to translate in the NFL. So the same thing with Milton. So I end up writing, like, hey, I just don't see this. There's not this market there for a third-round pick. Like, it's just that nobody has really changed their opinion. And, you know, I write it and put out. And, you know, I got, like, Patriots fans are killing me. They're like, he's going to be a starter. He's the greatest this and that. And then, of course, they have to strap a pick to him to ultimately get, what, a fifth? Yeah, he's enticing. He's fun to watch, but – there's a lot of, you know, interesting stuff that I saw, I think, you know, comes along with them in terms of just getting them into the structure of an offense and being able to, you know, run a consistent NFL offense with them.
Good call, Joe.
A lot of slander, a lot of Joe slander today. A lot of multiple Joes taken. I mean, you know, if you want to talk about some of the stuff you told me about Jamarcus Russell before that draft, we can get into that too if you want. I mean, you know.
Hey, you know what? At least I'm backed up by all the execs who still to this day will tell you who were their greatest pro day workout I've ever seen. Like John Elway was like, I've never seen a dude do that before at a pro day. And I'm like, yeah, this is John Elway. Like, John Elway's like, that dude's got the biggest arm I've ever seen. Like, just craziness. But, one other thing, Joe. You got to stop. Like, Patrick Mahomes is not yet the greatest quarterback of all time. I'm listening to you, and I'm like, keep saying Patrick Mahomes is the greatest quarterback of all time.
He is a certified Brady hater.
No,
and will
not
admit
not.
That he is, but
Come
he
on.
Is a – He's an enormous hater of Tom Brady.
I think Brady's great. Yeah. What are you talking about? Brady's absolutely one of the best quarterbacks of all time. I think he's probably like the GOAT in waiting, right? I would agree that he's not right now.
He's headed that way, but he's not there yet.
Yeah, that's fine.
He's headed that way. I'll give you that, but he's not. I think he
might be the greatest talent we've seen, right? But yeah, I mean, I agree. Achievement still has to match up with
him. The amount of appreciation for Tom Brady – for me, probably the last 5 years of his career is where it completely built. Like, everything else he did, sure, that was all impressive, and obviously there's no doubt, rings, all the everything. But I'm telling you, the last 5 years of his career are the ones I can't figure that out. I just can't, especially now that I'm seeing other quarterbacks just consistently break down as they get toward – because I was like, oh, this is how it's going to be now. Like, oh, quarterbacks all play till they're 40. And they'll all be the great ones. Will all play till they're 40, and they'll all be great until they're 40. And then some of them will go from, you know, 41, 42, 43, and still be great. No, these guys are like all. I'm watching this stuff where it's like clear as day. Guys just are deteriorating as they should. And Tom Brady from 40 to 45 is just makes no sense to
me.
And
by the way, it looked like he absolutely was in that 2019 season. And then I don't know. He found some kind of fountain of youth. Fountain of Botox / HGH or whatever, but I'm with you.
Retro still got him behind Dan Fouts on the all-time ranking list, so that's good.
Very underrated. Someone on the text line,
baby.
By the way, someone on the text line saying that LeSean McCoy said Dak needs to get a realtor now that Milton's in Dallas. Oh my goodness, that's fantastic.
Oh my God.
Put the house up for sale, Dak. Joe's in town.
But this is what I love, though, is also. Like, so some of what happened in New England that is eventually maybe this story gets told, who knows. But when Robert Kraft comes out Gerard Mayo's been fired as head coach, Robert Kraft kind of makes this sort of half joke, but not really a joke, that they have like two starting quarterbacks, right? It looks like we have two starting quarterbacks. People inside the Patriots were just like, oh my God. Like, just, they were like, what is he doing? Why would he, has he, no. Every guys in the locker room, like everybody knew, it's not even close. They're like, no, he's not a starting quarterback, and I think that creates some stuff inside the building because you know you have guys who are like, okay, like you know, here's all the ways that we can recount that no, he's not, and he's years away from ever being that. Maybe that comes someday, but it's definitely not there now. So you know, whatever that happens, and I'm thinking in my mind. Patriots fans and heading toward 2025, I'm like, man, if Drake May struggles, like let's say, okay, year two, you know, just doesn't come out of the gate hot or whatever. Like how long is it going to take before people are like, well, we got Milton, but Milton look, beat up the Bills and look at how great he's looked in the preseason. He destroyed the Jets and all this other stuff. And obviously whatever he does in the 2025 preseason, when he got traded to Dallas, I thought in my mind, the only place this is going to get worse is Dallas.
Right.
Because Dallas fans are going to – if he goes out there and he does what he did in the preseason, if he does what he did against the Bills, if he gets out there and he's all – you know, it's exciting to watch him play. It's also scary. But if he does that, Dallas fans, I'm not kidding, they're going to go crazy. Like, they're going to drive Dak Prescott nuts with this. There could not have been a better landing spot if you just want to drum up drama and listen to a fan base who's, like, they're already turning on Dak anyway, as it is. Like, it's this roller coaster of, like, loving Dak and hating Dak. Oof, now you add Milton to that. I'm calling it right now. We will talk about this next season at some point. Maybe it's the preseason. Maybe it's the regular season. We're going to talk about how Dallas fans are all saying that Joe Milton needs to be the starter and they need to get rid of Dak. And it's going to be based on Joe Milton running around and showing off a huge arm and an ability to do exciting things out of structure.
Look at Vrabel having the foresight to get that distraction out of there in New England. It's the new day up there, the Patriots.
I'll tell you what about Vrabel. When you talk to people in the building, they tell you, they're like, man, the BS stopped pretty quickly. He came in and it was like, okay, here's the guys we're getting out of the organization. Here's the ones we got to keep. We're going to get out as quickly as possible. Everybody's going to be on the same page. When I come to you and I ask you for an honest assessment, guys, you are on the line. If you don't give me an honest assessment, like, yeah, some people definitely in that organization are like, it's refreshing because there was so much BS going on in 2024. That's all out the window now. And it's vital that they have a great draft in 2025. I think you could see some shuffling, whether it's with Elliot Wolf or whoever. If 2025, that draft looks as poor as 2024 did, there's going to be some blood in the streets for sure. But yeah, it's interesting just to hear people talk about Vrabel and the organization and how things have shifted gears pretty quickly.
Charles, great stuff, man. Appreciate you taking time to be with us today. And a couple weeks out from the draft, we're getting closer.
Yeah. Oh, where do we stand? Where do you guys, I mean, what's the Cam Ward? What's the story of the day with Cam Ward now?
It's just the daily acceptance that he's going to be the quarterback here. Whatever, however, acceptance? It's. Well, I mean, it's. I mean, I wouldn't do it, but that's what they're going to do.
What would you do? I'm curious. I want to hear your draft.
I would have signed. Well, I would take Shedeur Sanders over Joe Milton. So again, we've already discussed my excellent talent evaluation skills. But yeah, I would. But I would have signed someone, and I would be running to the podium to draft Travis Hunter, but you know, someone else will get him.
Okay.
So there you go.
Okay. Interesting.
He's going to be a great player. And I will be right on that one.
We'll see.
You'll be right on
Travis Hunter will be great.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. That's all right. Well, congratulations on your one.
Thank you. Take the wins when you can get them.
Thank you, Charles. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, guys. Take care.
Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports, our guest. Lots to get to there from Charles. We'll react to that coming up next. Robbie and Rex Row, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Got tickets to give away to see Pierce the Veil at Nashville Municipal Auditorium coming up on Wednesday, June the 4th. Be caller number 4. Caller 4, 615-737-1025. Caller 4 will win a pair of tickets to see Pierce the Veil at Nashville Municipal Auditorium coming up on Wednesday, June 4th.
Charles totally mischaracterized what I said, by the way.
I don't think so.
I said it on this show, and I said it to him, and I said this. I said, look, he has the skill set to be the number one pick. He also, this is a part Charles didn't relate to, also, if it doesn't get way better in some other areas, he could go undrafted. That is what I said. I wrote it. I wrote it in The Athletic. He is a number one pick to undrafted range player.
What I heard from that last segment was the NFL scouting community at large does not hold your opinion very highly anymore. Charles totally ruined it with you and the executives and the scouts across the National Football League.
Yeah, whatever. He does make a good point about Dallas. Boy,
that could be a tire fire.
The fan base, and he will. He'll go out in the preseason, and he'll throw like a 60-yard rope for a touchdown.
I need him to light it up in the preseason. Know,
and it'll be like this, Dak can't do that. You can't do that, Dak. Oh, man. I hadn't even thought about like just the potential with Joe Milton in Dallas for that kind of stuff. It could get pretty entertaining.
Could get very entertaining. I mean, the Cowboys in general. So they waited as long as they could basically wait with CeeDee Lamb to negotiate with him and pay him the money. Same thing with Dak. Like they waited forever on that. Now they've done it with Micah Parsons. Like at some point, does somebody around there not look at Jerry Jones and Stephen Jones and say, hey, you know, you guys keep waiting until the last possible minute to pay these players, and the only thing that's going to end up doing is costing you more money. Right. At the end of the day, like, maybe a change in strategy at some point here for the Cowboys.
Well, especially it depends on the position and what else is going on. But like at receiver last year, there was no question. You get it done as early as you can.
Yeah.
Because it just, oh, now there's a new big one. Oh, now there's a new, you know, biggest one. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know if that necessarily is the case with Parsons. I'm trying to think. Are there other?
Well, now that Garrett's done, yeah. I mean, you know, people think that T.J. Watt wants a new deal now that he's posting pics on Instagram of him with two fingers up walking out in a Pittsburgh uniform. So we'll see. But, like, they know they're going to have to pay Parsons more than $40 million a year now. Like, that's where the bar is. Yeah. So.
Yeah, there are benefits to getting things done early, but that's not what they do. Interesting stuff too from Charles on the whole, you know, trying to play those heartstrings, like, yeah. Cowboy for life.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know what, Zeke, get out of the country so that no one can talk to you at all. Okay, let's deal with it that way.
Also, interesting on the draft front with Rodgers and Cousins as to what they could be waiting for here.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess I get that. I get that with Rodgers. The Cousins thing is going to be really interesting. It's just, like, I'm sorry, admitted Cousins homer, okay? But I just, if you're him and you're like, oh, I don't want to just be a short-term bridge guy, like, that's the best you're going to do at this point. Like, no, there's not a team in this league.
Torn Achilles.
Yeah, there's not a team in this league that's going to look at you and be like, this is our next 5 years at quarterback. Yeah. I mean, you're just – so if you get another chance to – I mean, Cleveland, I think, could be tremendous, a tremendous opportunity for him. He and Stefanski have a history. They have a good roster. I think, like, if Cleveland gets Travis Hunter, he's going to make a difference for them right away. Also, you know, what if they went Abdul Carter? I mean, whatever. Like, that's a pretty good roster. And if they can get a receiver in this draft, that could be pretty freaking good. That could be pretty good. But how many other opportunities like that are there around the league? You know?
The last 2 years we've seen Cousins were the torn Achilles, the last year in Minnesota. And then last year, he, like, disintegrated as a player. Now, was he maybe more hurt? Like, they've tried to play it off since then that he was more hurt than
they let on. Like, the shoulder apparently was – but again, that stuff also is going to be more and more likely now.
Right, but like all that factored in, you're not getting more than like the opportunity to be a bridge guy.
But I like from the Cleveland perspective, I don't hate it. I don't hate it. You know, in terms of, you know, he's going to come in. You're going to get your upgrade. I mean, again, if he's healthy enough, you're upgraded.
Right.
He's going to be. You know, he is a great leader on stuff. Again, there's limitations to what that means if you don't play at a high level, but. I could see it actually being pretty good. You look at what Flacco did. There's somebody in the text line today who's just like hardcore thinks the Titans should sign Flacco, by the way, which I'm not quite there. But you look at what Flacco did a couple years ago with that team. I think Cousins could be better than him and is better than him at his default, and that could be pretty good. But if it's not them, I don't see much else out there that's really that promising.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. One more segment coming up next. More to react to from Charles Robinson. If you missed the interview with Charles, you can check it out. Robbie and Rex Road, wherever you get your podcast, Apple, Spotify, GameNashville.com. We'll have more on that coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Win an exclusive Jason Aldean experience. You can text in the keyword Jason to 615-737-1025. Receive a link to sign up for a chance to win all-inclusive tickets to the Eurostone Club at Bridgestone Arena to see Jason Aldean, plus also a chance to win $1,000 in cash as well. Again, text in the keyword Jason to 615-737-1025. Joe Mark in Paris on the text line says, I'd be good with Flacco for a year. Trade down once or twice in the first. Once in the second, fill a lot of positions, get your guy next year. The Joe Flacco movement, the Nashville, is growing by the text on the text line right now.
Yeah. Man, I don't know. Flacco, a couple years ago, great job. Tremendous coming off the couch, pinch hitting. Then, you know, you want to go back and watch that playoff game again. And I understand, you know, the balance of the season was pretty good from him, but that playoff game was like, oh, that's why he was sitting on the couch and available for anybody to sign as the season started.
He's also 40. So yeah. That too.
And like Charles said, We had this discussion before, too. It's like, are we going to start just talking about all these guys into their 40s? But no, I don't think so. Brady, you know, Brady's just got a special concoction of whatever helped him, you know, be Robo QB well into his 40s. So I don't.
Every
I don't
time know I see that. Him now, his face just looks weirder and weirder. Like he just keeps getting younger.
Yeah, it's unsettling. You need to just embrace getting old. Just embrace it. It's fine.
He won't do it.
Yeah, it's and it gets a little bit like. I don't want to say like, you know, obviously I think Michael Jackson had like a disease, but you know, it's like every couple of years and you'd see him again, it's harder and harder to look at him.
Yeah.
You know, it's getting that way with Brady, man. And like you show like the side-by-side pictures of like when he was like 25 versus now.
It's a lot different.
And it's like his jawline's different. Like, yeah. What are we doing here, man? Just age. We're all rotting corpses.
Well, luckily for you, you're going to get to see him on a weekly basis on the national broadcast in Fox when football season picks back up.
Yeah. Yay. I hope he has a good offseason of working on his craft because he's like the sixth announcing team level dude right now.
I'm sure he's putting in the film work right now. I'm sure there's a lot of effort going in. So I look forward to that. You know, yeah. When he's not making football decisions for the Raiders.
Yeah. You don't need to, like, everything doesn't need to be. You know, like, when we were on the team bus going to my fourth Super Bowl, it was just so great. Like, we really would want analysis of the game more than that.
Have you seen a couple of interesting mic'd up things have happened this week? I saw a video of Vrabel addressing the team in New England, you know, laying down the law for his new rules and expectations for the team out there. You got to be on time. And if you're not going to be on time, you got to communicate with people. You got to treat people with respect. And their goal is to win the division. There's a lot of things that Vrabel laid out there. Okay. And his little mic'd up thing that have got Patriots fans all fired up. Also, some videos coming out from North Carolina football spring practice, Joe. Of Belichick mic'd up, and he's back in his natural habitat out there. He's coaching him up out there in North Carolina, and then making sure that his girlfriend's copied on all the emails that are sent out there, the correspondence.
I haven't seen any of the Belichick stuff. Boy, that's going to be interesting. Yeah, the Vrabel, interesting stuff from Charles on Vrabel, the whole, you know, all the BS stops and all that stuff. Like, you know, Vrabel's a good CEO. You know, he's a good – there is no question who's in charge. Then I think there's a lot of value in that.
You could tell from the meeting. He wants the phones put away in the bag. He wants to make sure that he understands that there's style involved with it. But in the meeting, make sure the hood's down. I mean, you don't need to see anybody's hood in the meeting because then you could be taking a nap. And okay. You don't want that.
There you go. I'll have to go check this video out.
It's got Patriots fans all sorts of fired up. They're ready.
They think it's all, yeah.
Finally, an adult in charge.
Yeah, yeah.
Probably not.
Meanwhile, when Vrabel got fired here, it was like, oh, now we got a coach who lets people be them. Just be themselves.
We can breathe again around here.
Yeah, yeah. Now we can make adjustments now and correct things, unlike before when we never did. It's always the new guy's always – it's always the right answer, and it's usually very different from the last guy.
We need to get an update from Arden Key when OTAs come around again because, you know – he started last year by like, hey, we're making some corrections around here. And we didn't do that before when Vrabel and this staff was here. And by the end of the year, they weren't making corrections anymore on the defensive side of the ball. So
we've
got to get back into Arden Key's headspace here and figure out exactly what's going on with the coaching staff.
Yeah, that is worth a follow-up with him, right? The answer may be, actually, we just sucked way more than I realized. We actually did try to correct things, but we're not good, so we couldn't.
Went back and studied some of the film, and it turns out you can't cover someone when you're 7 yards away from them. It's hard to make up that space in the NFL.
I'm just glad Arden is still here, and he and Paul Kaharsk can continue to cultivate their relationship.
Big day today, Joe. Masters is underway. Scotty Scheffler's teeing off here in about 20 minutes or so. Hope you enjoy yourself today watching this tournament, Joe.
Yeah, I mean, like, talk about amazing athletes. I mean, look at this Justin Thomas with these freaking green slacks. You know,
he's a roll tider.
Amazing athletes here. No, it's fine. I'll watch an hour Sunday.
We'll see what happens. Big tournament. Looking forward to it. That does it for us today. Chasing Big Joe is coming up next. You're listening to 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Have a great day, guys. Enjoy the sunshine.